So you are indeed. Very welcome to a new episode of the Swap Meet podcast. My name is Danny O'Hanlon.
My name is Niall McCann.
And Niall, it's good to hear you, man. I've been looking forward to this all day.
Good. So have I. Yeah, I enjoy these things. I enjoy these podcasts. I enjoy doing the podcast.
Have you been up to much this week? Do you have anything to share with anybody?
I butter-basted a steak last night. I can still feel it on me. It was the nicest steak I'd ever tasted. And it's not a weekday meal. I can tell you that.
It's like a hangover. You need a couple of days.
That's a bank holiday meal. That's what that is. Whew. And frankly, have it on the Friday evening.
Were you making it for someone else, or were you eating it yourself?
No, I'm on a healthy eating kick, Dan. So I went and got all sorts of nice, fresh ingredients. I got lovely peppers and nice onion. And I did all of that stuff. It was nice. And then I thought, you know what? Instead of just putting my body through the fast, immediate shock of pure health, this lovely piece of meat I have, I'll baste it in butter. And it was literally unbelievable. It was the most gorgeous thing. It was the most gorgeous thing. I'm never doing steaks any other way now.
We were talking about this before, and we decided that like bread, potatoes, all these kind of things, they're just butter transport systems.
Well, in Ireland they are anyway, yeah.
When Kevin Smith lost all the weight, part of how he lost the weight was this kind of weird potato diet, because what happens is when you eat a lot of potatoes, for some reason it converts the weight in your body into water and you lose most of it. I think it's something like water. It's some weird fucking California shite. After he had his heart attack, he went on a potato only diet. And you think, oh, great, well, I love potatoes. This is going to be easy. And then you realize, oh, I don't love potatoes. I love butter and ketchup and mayonnaise and all the shit that you put on them. Like, you know.
I remember him talking about that before. I remember the nutritionist being all, oh, you can't live on potatoes, Gavin. I thought, what kind of nutritionist are you talking to? What's wrong with a spud?
It probably shouldn't be the only thing you eat. But he was only doing it for a while until he pissed out all his weight or whatever way the fuck it's supposed to work, you know?
Yeah, I don't believe in that magical turns fat into water thing. No. But I just believe that it's really healthy food. You can live on spuds. You can live on spuds quite happily. We're from a country that did for centuries.
Sometimes I wonder about the five-a-day thing after. Like is the are potatoes technically a vegetable, or are they like a starch or something like that?
The five-a-day number is just picked out of the air. In different countries, they give different numbers. The five-a-day is how much people in, I think it was the UK with the five, how many vegetables they thought they could get people to stomach in a day. Like in France or somewhere, it's nine, and in Japan, it's seven or so. It doesn't matter. It's vegetables are necessary, but don't, yeah, the number is ridiculous. And anybody who tells you you can't live on spuds.
Anyone who tells you that never had to be in a famine.
I know, like, there's a period late summer, early autumn where my father would just live on spuds for a month. And he was not sick or ailing. It was when the new spuds came out. He just couldn't. That would be his dinner. He'd just take a big fucking plate of new spuds and a wedge of butter, like a whole thing of butter, a stick of butter. But you can absolutely live on spuds. They're a perfectly good, healthy food. He fucking loved it. He'd be like rubbing his hands coming in from work. Oh, there's new spuds. Oh, crap, new spuds.
That's amazing.
That's all he'd eat like.
I'm not surprised that the level of vegetables that people say you should eat in Ireland and England are lower than they are in France, because we just boil the fuck out of everything, or at least we used to. Like, I hated vegetables when I was younger. Obviously, boiled potatoes, it's still the best way to do them. A boiled potato is just the business, but boiled fucking carrot. My mom used to boil celery, and I'd just be like, what the fuck? It's celery's mostly water already, like, you know.
Celery is a weird food. Am I right in saying that it burns more calories to digest celery than it does than you get from the celery?
It sounds right. It sounds smart.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that sound smart. I remember in an old job, I was doing Christmas Eve shift. I was doing the late shift on Christmas Eve. And to amuse myself, I made up facts and emailed them around to people.
What was the best one?
A baby has more bones than a shark has teeth. That was one of them.
That's a good one.
Anybody can randomly string words together into a coherent sentence. That's not the same as having a fact.
That's true. If you take nothing else from this podcast, it's that not all words are facts. When we were talking just before we pressed record, we were fucking about with Zoom. You brought up Robert Frost. Do you want to talk? Was there you had a Robert Frost thing you wanted to say?
No, I just laced out a couple of lines of The Road Not Taken because you were doing a sound test. Google it. It's on YouTube. There's a very good, I can't remember enough about it. It was about why he wrote that and who he wrote it for. And it's actually kind of sad. It's just kind of a sad story.
Oh, I assumed he was just fucking lost in the forest. And he was like, fuck, there's two roads, man. What am I supposed to do? It's not going to invent GPS for another fucking 60 years or something.
No, he was writing it to sort of gently mock a friend of his who died in World War One, I think. Yeah, it's not just the casual inspiration it is often taken for. It was kind of a comic thing where he was kind of sneering at a mate of his through the poem. And then the mate died very tragically young, and it kind of just left that overtone on the poem.
I liked him in The Simpsons. Remember they were showing all the mock old clips from the Krusty Show on The Simpsons? And Robert Frost was like, they dump a load of snow on him. I'll give you snow, Frosty. And we discussed this and I said no. That's one of my favorite things in The Simpsons ever. We discussed this and I said no. It's covered in fake snow.
Talk shows have changed. I can waste hours listening to or watching sort of old videos of old Dick Cavett bits.
I don't like Dick Cavett. He came across really badly on a documentary about Janis Joplin. He came across really badly on a Janis Joplin documentary. He came across like a right fucking leering cunt.
The list of men who abuse Janis Joplin is not a short one. And I doubt Dick Cavett is very high on this, to be 110% with you.
I don't know. It's the only proper documentary that anyone's ever made about her. And he was like less than gallant, let's say.
That can't be true, can it?
I think it's definitely the best one that was made about her anyway. The man who treated her the best out of all these guys was the guy you would have assumed was the biggest scumbag, was Pigpen from The Grateful Dead.
Poor Janis. You see, I think Janis is, I think the real tragedy of Janis is that Janis kind of thought she had to go along with it. Like, she had to be one of the boys. Like,
she didn't even think she was that great a singer. I saw her in that documentary and she was saying, like, I think she mentioned Billie Holiday and she said, when I watch Billie Holiday sing, she can control her voice. And I'm paraphrasing her here, but like she said, she can control her voice and I'm just kind of wailing and I don't really have any kind of control over it. Like, you know, she was saying that's what I'd like to be in the next few years, is learn how to actually sing and not be, you know, not be like ripping my heart out of my chest every time I have to do a concert. Like, you know,
oh, I do feel bad for her. I do feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
She did. It's interesting. Yeah. Joan Baez. But then I was going to say, you can't imagine anybody sort of treating Joan Baez that bad, but fucking Dylan did, didn't he?
The main break he got was as her introducing him on various concerts she was doing and stuff like that. And when he got the chance to go and play in England, and he took her with her for whatever sick reason, like, and then didn't let her really play at any of the gigs, like, you know.
I was young and I had expectations and wanted to be where the action was. And I should not have been that there at that time. Everybody was having a wonderful time and they were all smashing things up in the hotel room. And I was this weird square over in my room who didn't do all that stuff. I was very critical of everybody who did and wanted my time with Bob because I thought he was a special friend. And he'd moved on. And it was awful. I mean, it just hurt like hell. I assumed that since I'd invited him on the stage in the States, he would invite me on the stage there. He had no intention of doing that.
Did you know who did it? Was it Brian Ferry did a whole fucking album or maybe more of Dylan covers? I just discovered that the other day. It was fucking weird.
I think you can hear it in some of the really early Roxy music
Ferry.
Stuff. Yeah. Do you ever listen to Virginia? You know the song Virginia Plain? You know the one they took the piss out of in Big Train?
No.
But there's like bits on that song where he's like, take me on a roller coaster. And I can hear the Dylan. Take me on a roller coaster. Take me for an airplane ride. Take me for a 60 maneuver. Don't you throw my pride aside. First we laugh, make believe. Baby Jinx and Acapulco, we are flying down to Rio. I've been listening to a lot of Kanye West recently.
Okay. Why?
Because he's got this new album out, I've been listening to all these podcasts where they're talking about him like he's Bowie or, you know, one of these kind of people, and or Michael Jackson or someone. And I just thought, I completely dismissed him, didn't listen to any of his shit. Like, you know, so I went back and listened to some of it. And it is one of those things where it's like, all right, some of this is kind of amazing, you know?
Look, there are Kanye songs that are undeniably good, but there's some circuit not firing there.
Oh yeah, he's an egomaniac. Like, you know, there's no two ways about that.
Yeah, but if he was just an egomaniac, and I could happily, if he was Donald Trump, and I could just happily write him, I think that man's suffering.
Yeah, well, he just put out a new album that's nearly 2 hours long and is a slog and a half to fucking try and listen to. Like, you know, but some of his older stuff.
What are people saying about it?
Pretty much that. Some people say there's a really good album buried in it. I personally can't hear it. But then again, I haven't been able to listen to all of it. Like, when you're a new parent, that's not the time to get into Kanye West's 25-song album. Like, you know, you listen to one of them a day for a month kind of thing.
Listen, there could be all sorts of things buried in all sorts of objects, but... don't know if I'm for the digging anymore.
This is the Spot Me podcast, Niall. I should have told you that at the start, but I let you talk on. I led you in under the pretense that we were just having a conversation, but we're not. This is the Spot Me podcast.
This is the podcast.
And you and I swap pop cultural artifacts, mainly films this weather, which is good. I got you to watch Steve Martin, Rick Moranis comedy written by Nora Ephron, directed by fucking whoever. And it's called My Blue Heaven.
Vincenzo. Mama. Vieni cara.
Oh, Mama. Former gangster Vincent Vinny Antonelli.
I'm a new man.
Is being placed under federal protection.
Not the old me.
Hidden in suburbia.
This is the new me.
Assigned his own personal FBI agent.
Now, this is a real nice house. It's one of the nicest we've ever moved anyone like you into.
Hey, Linda, what do you think? I always promised you a nice house somewhere in America.
Let's not get carried away, okay, Vinny?
It's going to be a lot easier if you two start calling each other Terry and Todd.
It's a nice house, Terry. Okay?
No, you're Terry and he's Todd.
When will call.
Thanks for everything. I really appreciate it.
And even his knife.
This is my job. I get paid. You don't tip FBI, man.
Sure you do.
I need you to mine.
And the reason I picked it is because I watched the thing on YouTube that told the story that Nora Ephron was married to Nicholas Pileggi, who wrote Wise Guys, which is the book that Goodfellas is based on. And she, using the same research, the same source material, wrote a film about a mobster who is in witness protection and has to move into like small town USA and live his life not being a mobster anymore. And
yes,
it's and because of the way it works out, it is kind of a sort of a strange sequel to Goodfellas in a way. But it's My Blue Heaven. It's a fairly light affair compared to its spiritual predecessor, Goodfellas. It's nothing like Goodfellas, really.
No, it isn't.
It's a comedy. Like, neither of us had seen it when I picked it. I just admit that watching that little YouTube documentary about it really made me want to watch it. And I have to say, I enjoyed it. I don't think it's anybody involved's best work or anything, but I did enjoy it. Like, I didn't find much. I liked it. I chuckled a couple of times. It's a fairly light affair, and I thought it was good.
I didn't like it. Steve Martin ruined this film. There's a decent sort of a film somewhere in the middle of all this, ruined by Steve Martin.
So it's interesting you bring that up, because Steve Martin was actually originally supposed to play the Rick Moranis role. And do you know who was supposed to be the main guy?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Was going to play Italian-American mob.
I have to assume they would have had to do a bit of rejiggering about it. They couldn't have him play an Italian. I don't think that would have worked. It barely worked with fucking Steve Martin doing it.
It's stank of Nora Ephron in that it's kind of kind of day in the life, and it's kind of sort of people sort of going through their marriages and divorces, trying to get on with their lives. And then into the middle of this is the most broadly painted SNL parody that frankly isn't funny enough to sustain a whole film, like many SNL characters.
I think he has his moments. I find every time, because what happens is he's living in this town, witness protection. His wife leaves him immediately, fucks off because she's not going to live in fucking, you know, any town, the USA, sticks. Wherever they are, like, you know, and so, but what he discovers is that there's a shitload of other mobsters on witness protection living in the same town. So they start, start like a crime wave of really shit crime of like putting the prices down on steaks and all this kind of business like this, like, you know. But I did think every time he got pulled in by the police and was explaining himself, I found that funny. I don't know why. You're right. It was stupid. It was like a very broad SNL parody of a mobster. But every time he got pulled in by the cops and was like explaining why he was in a car that wasn't his and why he had a swordfish and all this kind of stuff, I found that funny, I have to say.
Todd Wilkinson, I'm Hannah Stubbs. I'm the assistant district attorney.
How you two girls doing?
What robbery? I borrowed a guy's car.
He gave you the keys. Is that correct?
He was supposed to leave the keys in the car.
But he didn't.
Right. If he'd have left them in the car, then I wouldn't have had to jumpstart it.
How do you happen to know how to jumpstart a car?
I learned it in the army. I was in the motor pool, and everyone was always losing their keys. The entire United States Army would not have moved had it not been for me jumpstarting it. And it came in handy on several occasions, jumpstarting ambulances in order to get invalids to the dialysis machines.
I don't think Steve Martin had an intention of making this guy a character. Like you say, his wife leaves him at the start of the film. She does. Doesn't mean anything. I don't give a fuck. He never seems to miss her. He never mentions her. And it's kind of this big sort of silly over the top. It might as well be Wayne and Waynetta Slob, like when they leave. Like it means the same to me. Like,
yeah, good shout.
I didn't hate the film.
I'm a big fan of a 5 or 6 out of 10 kind of film. Everything I watch doesn't need to take my head off my shoulders and spin it around like a basketball and put it back on my shoulders and go, try seeing the world the same way now, you cunt. You know, like, I don't need that with everything I watch, you know.
Look, this is kind of a very middle range film. It's like a 50% or if you were going to give it a grade.
But I feel like there's not enough of those now.
There was the guts of a good film in there, but they needed to take it more seriously.
There's some funny bits, though. I agree with you. I think Steve Martin, you didn't buy him as a mobster at all. Like, but there's that bit where the guy who runs the supermarket is like, is there anything you'd want to see on the shelves more often? And he goes, arugula. What's arugula? It's a vegetable. I thought that was funny. There was bits in
It was funny. There was some bits, but they were funny. I loved when he takes him to meet his family. And he tells them that Moranis invented the rotary engine, the rotary motor.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a wee bit ashamed how little I know about Nora Ephron. A little I followed her. I don't know. I get the feeling like maybe if she was a dude, I would have, at this stage, educated myself more on her.
She was a big challenger of the working conditions on film sets, because she said these are not designed to benefit women, these working conditions, these hours. This is for fucking coke addict men who don't want to go home to their wives. That's why the hours are so long on these. Like, and she was like, I refuse to work these hours. You know, I think she was a 9-to-5-er. Like, she ran a tight set. She wanted to get in, get her work done and get home, I think, you know. She would have been around the time of Apocalypse Now and all this kind of stuff, where it was like, you know, you go to Cambodia for fucking 6 months and you'd take acid and shoot fucking millions of feet of film. Like, I think she was like, I am in my shit doing that. You know, I want to get out, because she was a New Yorker, you know, she was like, I want to get out to the theater or whatever, you know.
And Janice, there was a lot of fucking bullshit in that 60s fucking I mean, I don't know. They talk about it, they talk about the idealism of the 60s, but it's kind of skeevy quite a lot of the time, I feel.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Like, I read a thing recently that was going on about the Summer of Love, and it was like, yeah, it was the Summer of Love if you were privileged and white. You know, for everybody else, it wasn't much of a Summer of Love, you know.
Fair play. I mean, I feel like, I really did feel like I should know more about her than I do. But I also got kind of the impression that she was the kind of person who would work with something to tailor it and to hone it down. And, you know, if that's not, if, you know, if that line is coming weird out of your mouth, maybe we can come up with a separate, a different line. You know, I get the feeling she was the kind of person who worked on things like that.
I think this might be before she started directing, though, because she did. I was watching a bit of that documentary last night, and it was apparently Mike Nichols said it to her, because I think he directed one of her scripts on something. And he just said to her, look, if you want it done your way, you have to direct or it's not going to work, you know.
It's fair enough. But she didn't direct Harry Met Sally. And I get the impression she worked like that on Harry Met Sally. Did you know?
Yeah, but you've got, I'd imagine with Rob Reiner, you've got a sympathetic collaborator there. Now, I don't know anything about the person who directed My Blue Heaven. I don't even know who they are. I don't even know the name.
I just know that he's an awful man.
Yeah, but I get the impression maybe that chance wasn't offered to her maybe on that film. Whereas Rob Reiner, he's probably thinking, well, look, I'm not a writer, really, like, you know, so I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, no, is he not a writer, Rob Reiner? No, did he write any of All in the Family?
No, I don't believe so.
That's one of my favorite sitcoms.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made. Those were the days.
And you knew when you were there.
Dance for girls and men, women. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again. Didn't need no welfare states.
Everybody pulled his weight.
G-R-O-S.
So My Blue Heaven, and I don't mean to be giving out shit about Steve Martin either. I like Steve Martin. He's made some really good films.
I think the reason he pushed himself to play that role is because he'd never really played a role like that before. He'd really just been Steve Martin in stuff before.
A role like what?
Like something that wasn't just him, like a sort of a man-child, you know, although I suppose you could say he is a man-child, but I get, has he got to do an accent?
This is, I would have said, yeah, this is exactly what I would expect Steve Martin to do with this. In the worst sense of that, of saying that, he just did a silly character, but like you say, this time the silly character had a slightly different accent.
And the thing is, like, they had these actual quite good actors playing the other gangsters. Like, they look like faces from actual gangster films. Yeah, some of those guys.
Yeah, that old guy from the pet shop. He did look like a gangster.
Oh God, I wish I could remember what the other one looked like.
The turtle died, and you're gonna pass another turtle off as the dead turtle, right?
Right.
Trust me, they all look alike.
Did you see those trailers for fucking the Sopranos film?
No, are they making a Sopranos film?
Yeah, like the, was it the Many Saints of New York or something?
Oh, I guess I did read that your man Chase is annoyed that it's going on HBO Max for some reason.
A lot of things are doing that now.
Yeah, but sure, didn't Scarlett Johansson try to sue Disney because her film went on the streaming platform instead of in the cinema?
She did sue.
It's just like, who the fuck? Come on now.
Hang on a second. If she's getting a cut of box office and then they don't put it anywhere that has a box office, but they still show it to everybody.
Streaming must be built into that now at this point, like with those kind of agreements.
Evidently not. She's suing to build it in.
Oh, well, maybe that'll work. I don't know. I don't have an awful lot of sympathy for her, I must admit.
No, you're absolutely right. If we can't just fucking let the corporations walk all over us, what can we do? Like, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's the least we could do for the poor bastards.
Yeah, it's a good thing we have freedom fighters like Scarlett Johansson out there.
You can't let Disney away with this shit. You can't let Jesus Christ.
We all
Christ.
Happily gave them the money. Like, anyone who's paying for Disney Plus at the minute, when a Disney film actually does go to the cinema, they're annoyed because they're paying Disney a tenner a month or whatever it is.
This is exactly like when fucking Alan Moore was taken on the comics companies and everyone was like, oh, he's such an asshole. Can't work anywhere. He kind of was like, when did we all decide that the fucking working man suing for his fuck or no, Moore didn't even sue, I don't believe. But the working man standing up for his rights when he's clearly being shafted by a fucking faceless multinational corporation is suddenly the opinionated, entitled bad guy.
I can't accept Scarlett Johansson as the working man, though. I'm not even talking about gender. I'm just talking about, like...
She did a job. She deserves to get paid.
I'm sure she did.
She got paid. And then there was a certain amount of money coming to her that they said... Oh, yeah, we don't do that anymore, so you're not getting that. Just maybe you just butter me arsehole in preparation, like, and wait for somebody.
Well, you started with the steak. You might as well carry on. Just butter everything in your house, including your arse.
If she either has a point or she doesn't have a point. Her respective level of privilege is neither here nor there. And frankly, there is no human being on the planet that has privilege like the Disney Corporation has privilege.
Like, the only way to take all this down is just to not give them any more money. But we will.
I know. What can I do? What can I tell you? Because they get you coming and going.
Hang on. There's no what can we do. We can do things. We can just stop.
That's true. But what will I do then? Like, will I just not use Google anymore?
I mean, you could. You could not use Google. Bing.
Bing is searching a different internet. A different, much smaller, and much weirder internet. Because Bing can't get you what you want.
What about Jeeves?
I sent Jeeves out for something in 2007 and the cunt's still out there, mother.
We've totally forgot to mention Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald, poor Norm. Are people dying younger?
Well, he wasn't well. He had cancer for like a decade, I think.
I heard the
articles I read said he was a real singular force. Like, he just had he was operating on his own fucking frequency altogether.
You couldn't hand those jokes to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, some of them weren't even fucking jokes. You know, like, it was just, did you ever see him do that moth thing?
Yeah.
I don't know where to turn to. My youngest, Alexandria. She fell in the cold of last year. Mm-hmm. The cold took her down as it did many of us. And my other boy. And this is the hardest pill to swallow, Doc. My other boy, Gregorio Ivanilidovich. I no longer love him. As much as it pains me to say, when I look in his eyes, all I see is the same cowardice that I catch when I take a glimpse of my own face in the mirror. If only the cowardice was stronger, then perhaps I could bring myself to reach over to that cocked and loaded gun that lays on the bedside behind me. And in this hellish facade once
How
and
long
for
a
all.
Drive was this? Do you live in the valley? Where do you live? Please, sorry.
He says, Doc, sometimes I feel like a spider, even though I'm a moth, just barely hanging onto my web with an everlasting fire underneath me. I'm not feeling good. And so the doctor says, Moth, man, you're troubled. But you should be seeing a psychiatrist. Why on earth did you come here? And then the moth said, because the light was on.
When we were messaging about My Blue Heaven, you said you had some alternative casting.
Oh, because I kept watching and I kept thinking there's a good film in here if you could just get rid of that fucking sucking black hole in the middle of it. Yeah, I just was kind of recasting it casually in my mind while I was watching it, which should tell you all you need to know about that film. I think if the film was gripping me and working, I wouldn't be thinking like that.
Who did you come up with?
Well, I thought Danny DeVito could have done the Steve Martin role.
Yeah, that would have been funny. I would have bought that.
At which point, kind of a wild card, I would have given Joan Cusack's, if I was playing it safe, I'd have given Joan Cusack's role.
I don't like the idea of, I love Joan Cusack. I don't like the idea of recasting her.
Well, she needs to be recast. She was not good in this.
She wasn't given, look, this was before, I think she was Joan Cusack. You know, like recently enough, we watched School of Rock and she is brilliant in that. I think, I love Joan Cusack. I think she's brilliant.
I love Joan Cusack too. I love Steve Martin. I bear Rick Moranis no ill will.
I love Rick Moranis too. Bear him no ill will.
You bear him no ill will.
Rick Moranis was the guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids when I was young. I don't 100%. I don't know much else that he was even really in. Like, but he was one of the most famous people going. But he's not like I can't think of much else that I saw him in. Parenthood, I suppose.
Parenthood. What was Parenthood?
It was, I think it was a Rob Reiner film as well. It was like a sort of extended family get together. Steve Martin's in it as well. Mary Steenburgen is in it. Diane Wiest is in it. You must have seen it, man. It was on TV so much when we were younger.
I'm trying to think of other ones. He did just kind of disappear, didn't he? Like, am I right in saying like his wife died or something? And
yeah, his wife passed away and he raised his kids on his own. So he wasn't in films and stuff. And I think the stuff he was in was probably Honey, I Shrunk the House or whatever came after, whatever sequels to those, like straight to video sequels they did for those. I think he did like a couple of them.
I have an awful fondness for him, but like you say, it's from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Little Shop of Horrors. I'm very fond of Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, I knew there was another big one I was missing. Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors for sure. He is really good at impressions. If you look at some of the, there's a lot of the SCTV sketches, and he does a really good Woody Allen. He does a great George Carlin.
Coming soon to SCTV, Taxi Driver with Woody Allen. A special presentation on SCTV's Movie of the Week.
I know what you're thinking, that violence really isn't my thing, you know, that my idea of violence is like a pink shirt with purple pants, but I have to ask you something. Are you talking to me? I mean, there's nobody else here. I mean, you're talking to me? Who are you talking to?
Woody Allen is talking to you in Taxi Driver. Thursday at 9 on SCTV.
Do you remember Bill Hader doing Alan Alda?
No.
It's just one of those weird... It's such a random sketch. It was just so clear. Bill Hader said, "Hey, I think I can do Alan Alda." And they were like, "Okay, do it in a sketch." It's just so random. No, it's like nobody was asking for an Alan Alda impression.
Hey, what are you looking at, butthead? Hey, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here? You know, that is a great line. I mean, that is so great. You know? The stuff you guys are doing with the 50s and everything. You know, I had jackets like this. Can you believe that? I'm the old guy, you know? Son, your ego's writing checks your body can't cash. That is a terrific line. I feel like I understand everything about this movie just from the one line. That's good writing, you know? And I don't know about airplanes.
Alan Alda, for Muldoon.
Live a girl. That dinosaur comes out and attacks me. Oh, God, you guys, that is great. That is just terrific. And how are you guys going to shoot the dinosaurs? Is it going to be force perspective? See, you know, that's how we shot Jamie Farr on MASH. Yeah, no, he's only about 2 feet tall.
That's a pretty common thing that they do on sketch shows, is that they'll say, if they've got an impressionist on the cast, they'll say, well, what impressions do you do? Because if you... I don't know if you've ever seen Big Train, but the Graham Linehan, Arthur Matthews sketch show. Mm. But they do a couple of sketches where Kevin Eldon plays George Martin, the Beatles producer. And he literally just is blathering on like he's on a Beatles documentary. But all of a sudden, like, terrorists break into the studio and carry him away and throw him in the back of a van. And he just keeps talking. He does it like he just keeps talking about whatever stupid Beatles story he's going on about. And there's no real punchline to it. Except he gets rescued. And then at the press conference for his rescue, he just carries on talking about whatever Beatles story he was talking about when they kidnapped him. It's really stupid, but it's very funny.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We're about to start a press conference now. Mr. Hooper and Mr. Martin are extremely tired, and we'll only be asking a few questions now, okay? So thank you very much.
Mr. Martin, were you ever afraid for your life?
Well, the Beatles certainly never took drugs in front of me. I was always vehemently against the drugs scene, particularly the heavier stuff, heroin, LSD. Now, having said that, when we were in the studios, quite often the lads would nip off to the loo for 10 minutes, smoke a bit of pot, come back, wreathed in smiles, be a bit of giggling and horseplay, and then we'd carry on with work. But generally, I tended to turn a blind eye.
Do you think your release represents a positive shift in attitudes towards the West, or is it just a publicity stunt?
Well, I never really understood all the criticisms against Ringo's drumming. As far as I was concerned, he was an inventive and powerful player. You only have to listen to some tracks like, I don't know, Tomorrow Never Knows, Hey Jude, Strawberry Fields, and I could go on. Absolute tour de force.
I think Nora Ephron wrote a kind of comedy that is totally out of fashion. I think like The Simpsons and Father Ted and 30 Rock killed a different kind of comedy that I really, really miss. And I fucking love The Simpsons and I love Father Ted and I love 30 Rock. But I didn't know that that would be it, that people would lose the ability to write like Nora Ephron wrote.
What exactly do you mean? Like comedies with adults in them about adults.
I remember you saying it, or maybe you were quoting the writer saying like, Homer Simpson's like a dog. He's not a character. He's just different. He's just whatever the gag is, they have to send him. He'll do whatever the gag takes. And you can see that in 30 Rock. Like Tracy Jordan's like that in 30 Rock. He's a different, like they're not, the gag is just nobody's ever going, yeah, it's funny, but it doesn't work for this character. Or maybe they are, but I get the impression they're not. To me, that's what somebody needed to say in this film. Steve, yeah, it's all very funny. You're doing the fucking accent and making the weird face, but it doesn't work. We need more than this. I can't take this sort of relationship that's supposed to be blossoming between you and Rick Moranis seriously, because this thing you're doing isn't capable of having a relationship. It's yeah, a cartoon.
You can't build on it enough.
Yeah. Whereas Danny DeVito was well fit to play those kind of just kind of sort of scumbags, but you still make them likable.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
He was well able to do that. I think he could have done that, given him then. Oh yes, I never finished my recastings because you decided it was an insult to Joan Cusack to tell her she didn't work in this film, which she doesn't, Dan. She doesn't, man. If I had all the money in the world and I was playing it safe, Sally Field, because this was 1990, it would have been perfect. She would have been perfect for it, and she could have done something with it, and it wouldn't have been a spit take when that happened. You would have seen, oh, my husband's coming and going from my house. I'm trying to do a full-time job. I'm dealing with this fucking lunatic at work, and I have now killed the pet. And you would have seen, oh, this is getting on top of me. This is getting on top of me. You would have seen that in Sally Field, and you don't see it in John Cusack. You just don't. If you wanted to be a little bit more sort of out there in my head, the one I would really want, for some reason, and I'm not sure why, is Beverly D'Angelo. I do kind of know why. It's because I thought she was the best thing in Pacific Heights a few weeks ago. And she was in it for 90 seconds. And I want to see her given a proper role somewhere. I want to be like, yeah, give it to Beverly D'Angelo. She's just better than everybody else in that film.
She'd be a bit hardcore for this, though, wouldn't she?
Maybe. But then you could have put, instead of Rick Moranis, you have either the boring one would be Matthew Broderick, the I wonder could he do this one, but if he could, it would be amazing, would be Michael J. Fox. Then you have kind of Michael J. Fox with an older woman kind of dynamic, even though probably in reality, there's about 3 years between them. But in Hollywood terms, that's Michael J. Fox with an older woman if it was him and Beverly D'Angelo.
I don't like that cast.
That's no problem, Dan. You could be wrong. You don't have to invest.
Imaginary recasting of my
head. I will make all the money in the world from that. I would, because you would be sitting on the sidelines going, why didn't I get in early?
Yeah, it'll be 1990. I'll be waiting for the next 30 years for them to invent podcasts so I can get on and give out about it.
I don't know. Well, who would you put in there?
I wasn't really thinking along those lines, though, because I like everybody in the film. So even though Steve Martin wasn't doing his best Steve Martin, I was still kind of thinking, well, it's fine. It's still Steve Martin. Like, I get it. He hasn't really done anything like this before. He's feeling his way. It's a bit fucking broad. You don't buy him as a mobster. He looks like... But then again, this is controversial. I didn't like fucking... What's his face in Goodfellas? The main guy who played Henry Hill.
Ray Liotta.
Yeah, I didn't like him at all in Goodfellas.
What the fuck?
First time I watched Goodfellas, and it opens up with that, they're getting the body out of the back of the car, and then it does like a push into his face, like slamming the door, and then it goes, ever since I can remember, I always wanted to be a good fella.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
And it just goes up to his face. I was like, him? He looks like he's about 11. Like,
yeah. He. What does that mean? It's when you went through his entire life. He was 11.
But that
at one
wasn't.
Point.
Yeah, but not at basically the start of the film happens near the end of the film, right?
No.
Does that scene where they're burying your man fucking Maury with the wigs? That the Goodfellas opens.
That's not near the end.
But Goodfellas opens with them. You don't know it's him yet, but it opens with the scene with them with Maury in the trunk of the car. That's the first scene in Goodfellas. And then it goes right back to his childhood.
That happens after Pesci kills your man who made fun of him at the bar, isn't it?
No. Maury doesn't show up in the film till a good fucking... Like, how long is Goodfellas? Like, but it's a good hour before Maury shows up.
Yeah, but it's not near the end. It's not at the time when his life's falling apart and he's addicted to coke.
But it's not far away from it. It's not supposed to be far away from it. He's on coke at that point because Joe Pesci's still alive, obviously, so he hasn't been shot yet. Like, you know, I think that's when everything starts going really wrong. But you're a good... He's a good distance into being a good fella by the time your man with the wigs gets done.
He's a fair distance. Yeah, he's a fair distance. I'm not saying it's at the start of his career, but I don't think it's...
I'm not a fan of Ray Liotta in Goodfellas. I don't think Ray Liotta's a good actor, and I don't think he put in a good performance in that film.
Oh, my goodness. Do you like the film?
I mean, yeah, it's great. I like it well enough, like, you know, but I don't know if I'd ever watch it again, like, but...
I bear it no ill will.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to give me the choice right now to sit down and watch either Goodfellas or My Blue Heaven, I'd probably go My Blue Heaven. Like, you know, it's just the kind of film I prefer, but I don't like Ray Liotta in that film. I don't think he's not doing some amazing performance or anything.
Oh, I think you're wrong, man.
That's all right.
I really think... No, but... No, you must understand. I think you're really wrong.
Yeah, that's fine. I get it.
No, Dan, you're not... It's not getting through to you. You're wrong there, Dan. You're wrong about that,
I just
Dan.
Thought he was super cartoony and...
Really?
Yeah, it just didn't buy him, didn't like it. Liked everything around him, didn't like him.
Maybe we should swap it.
Oh, the Goodfellas.
You know, nobody else would react like that to that film. My mother, maybe. Goodfellas. Oh.
I don't know, like, a load of shots of fucking Robert De Niro smoking to playing against Martin Scorsese's very limited record collection. I don't know.
Oh, here.
Mick Jagger, because Scorsese directed that Rolling Stones concert film that was called Gimme Shelter, and apparently Mick Jagger said, oddly enough, it's the only film he's ever made that doesn't have Gimme Shelter in it.
That is another thing that kind of made it an uncomfortable watch for me a little bit. My Blue Heaven, I mean. The fact that it has that sort of... What would you call it? That sort of lineage, that shared heritage with Goodfellas. It's hard. He's playing a cuddly gangster in this.
I think this suffered from pretty poor direction. I think there's actually a funny script there. I don't know if I just think that because I know it's Nora Ephron. You know, maybe that colors it.
No, there is funny moments in it. There's definitely funny beats in it, funny jokes in it. To me, it's not enough. There were two things that didn't really mix. Stick Danny DeVito in instead of Steve Martin and you get fewer visual gags like him fucking mowing the lawn in the full fucking suit.
But what's wrong with that gag?
It makes him a cartoon. They might as well have stuck Dennis the Menace and Nasher in the middle of it as have him there. That's a cartoon thing. It's always the same suit. It's always the same hairstyle. It's always the same look on his face. It's absolutely not real. It was just like, well, I don't really have to care about anybody involved here, then, do I?
Yeah, I don't know what you're saying.
That Rick and Joan to find love, find solace in each other's fucking company. I don't need that because they're not real.
Was completely like, we're kind of told as an audience that we don't need to care about that. I just think.
Did you feel that as an audience we were told we don't have to care about that? Then what's the film about?
For me, it was about those two. It was about Steve Martin and Rick Moranis. Like, I thought the scenes they were in together, they were funny. Like, he goes off and gets married to Carol Kane. That's someone else. That's the other person I was trying to think of. Yeah, Carol Kane's in this. And again, given nothing to do.
Zero.
He goes to Vegas to get married or Reno or whatever. And he's like, it's okay. I didn't use my real name, which apparently is something Henry Hill actually did. He wasn't quiet about being in witness protection at all. Like, you know.
Yeah, well, he wrote a book. I suppose the truth is it annoyed me by times. But it annoyed me because I felt there was something underneath that just nobody was bothering their arses with. Like,
I mean, when you think of some of the stuff she came out with later, and even before that, like some of her, like her articles are really funny. And then there were a couple of films made by other directors with stuff that she wrote. And then obviously like it or loathe it, Sleepless in Seattle was a massive hit. Like, people loved it. And it was definitely a lot more real stuff in it than...
I want to go back and watch that again.
I want to go back and watch all her films again. There's one that she made based on her and her sisters. There's obviously Mixed Nuts. There's like Julie and Julia, I've seen a couple of times. I love that film.
Yeah, it's really good, that film. No, I got a lot of time for her.
It has its moments. It could have been better, but I still think it has its moments.
You're very kind to it now.
I enjoyed it, you know. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was like, I didn't think it was up there with even some of Steve Martin's other films. Like, you know, it's not as good as The Jerk or The Man with Two Brains. And I'm sure if you ask Nora Ephron, I'm sure she doesn't think about it as a shining moment in her career or anything. But look, this thing fucking slithered out there somehow, like, and in whatever form it took. And I saw it and I was like, you know what? I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it more than I would have enjoyed watching Goodfellas again, you know.
Fair enough, but that is weird that you don't like Goodfellas.
I don't not like Goodfellas, but I don't like Ray Liotta in it. I don't like Ray Liotta in anything, I don't think.
Like Pesci?
Well, Pesci's great in it, yeah. I heard, you know what, and someone said something on a podcast recently that I just haven't been able to get out of my head since I heard it, but they were saying she was making the argument that Joe Pesci is horribly miscast in that film, and she was saying he's way too old to be that character. Like, he doesn't look that much younger than Robert De Niro. But he's supposed to be like the kid, you know, like the sort of loudmouth, sort of quick to anger kid. And ever since I heard that, I can't not think about it when I think about Goodfellas.
Is he supposed to be the kid? I never thought of him as being younger.
I think he's supposed to be the same age as Henry Hill.
That never struck me as a huge gap in their ages. So is that going to be the only fucking thing I can see now the next time?
He gets made. He gets shot after he gets made. Spoilers, if you haven't seen Goodfellas. But if you think about it, like, if he's not supposed to be young and he's supposed to be older, why would they wait until he was that old to make him? Do you know what I mean?
What is the normal age for making him?
I don't have the documentation on me, but it's like being an apprentice, and then you serve your apprenticeship, and then you're a fully fledged fucking carpenter or whatever. Like, you know, so you get made at some point in your 20s or your 30s. I would have thought, like, you know, whereas looking at him, he looks older. He doesn't look quite as old as Robert De Niro. Not that De Niro was ancient in this, but he was older than Joe Pesci. He looks older than Ray Liotta. He doesn't look, those two lads don't look like they're coming up together. Like, Joe Pesci looks like in the hierarchy he would be above Ray Liotta.
I don't know, I'd have to watch it again, but that would be no chore for me, Dan.
I know, yeah. Probably once it started it wouldn't really be a chore for me either, but I just remember when I was 18 or whatever it was the first time I watched Goodfellas, I remember that first zoom in of Ray Liotta. Ever since I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And I remember thinking, really? I thought that looked like a sketch.
Are you serious? So you decided the first time you saw Goodfellas, you decided on the first glimpse of Ray Liotta that a man was too ugly to be a gangster, and you've held it against Goodfellas ever since.
I never once used the word ugly. I was not talking about his appearance in any other way than he just looked silly. Like, you know, he looked
I was not talking about his appearance, his horrible, horrible appearance. I did not mention it at all.
I didn't. I mean, it's recorded. We can go back and listen to it.
I don't know. I like Goodfellas. You know what else I like? You know what I love? More than Goodfellas. Comfortably more than Goodfellas. Maybe more than any other film. My Cousin Vinny.
That's a great film. I've been meaning to watch it again recently because it's on Disney Plus.
Is it? We should swap it.
Yeah. Well, should we do that for next week?
I had one picked, but...
If you've got one in the chamber, then that's all right. I don't mind if you want to do that either.
No, you will hate it though. So my cousin, and I kind of want to watch my cousin.
what was the one you thought I would hate?
I wanted you to read the priest's short story at the start of Hyperion, the science fiction novel. But you'll hate that. So my cousin Vinny, you will love. And
we
I will love.
You can do that for something different if you want.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking it would be different, and I do love Hyperion, but I kind of want to watch My Cousin Vinny now.
Okay, well, it's completely up to you. I don't mind watching reading the story you just mentioned. It's weird, because you said that you think that 30 Rock had a negative effect on the kind of comedies that they make for adults these days, but 30 Rock's a weird one, because it actually wasn't that popular. It wasn't a big hit at all.
No, but it was influential, though.
It wasn't. I think Parks and Recreation was probably watched by more people than 30 Rock was, and even that wasn't a massive hit. Like, you know, Tina Fey's a great writer, but she was writing sketches and gags, and I remember, like, John Cleese said something about, he just said, you get sick writing sketches because nothing has any consequence. Like, characters get burned off at the end of the sketch, and it just keeps going and going, and nothing is very deep or has any kind of consequence. And Nora Ephron wasn't writing gags or wasn't writing sketches. She was writing, she was writing magazine pieces, but she was writing about her life, you know.
She's writing characters, is what she was writing.
Yeah,
there's like John Cleese was right. There's consequence to the stuff. You know, somebody gets their heart broken, they get their heart broken. It's not just, you know, okay, right, heartbroken, now into the next scene. You know, that relationship between Moranis and Martin should have been necessary for both of them, but he might as well have been having a relationship with Bugs Bunny. Like, it well, okay, right, listen. What if I don't swap out anybody but Steve Martin for Danny DeVito? What's the film like then?
See, you have two short lads then, and it's not funny. It would have to be the lad in the FBI would have to be taller.
Like very tall. You get Daniel Stern to play him.
Yeah, that could work. That was the biggest ask of that film, I think, to me, was to buy Daniel Stern as like this kind of almost like abusive husband. It's just like, Daniel Stern? Come on.
Is that because of City Slickers? Will you forever think of him as that guy in City Slickers, that hand-tech guy?
I was such a big fan of City Slickers, I can't even tell you. When that film used to be on like probably RTE and as well on Channel 4 like all the time. I loved City Slickers.
I had it taped off the telly, like, so even when those brief periods of months when it wasn't on, I had it there on the fucking shelf.
2 weeks, three of us. New Mexico. Driving cattle.
What, like in a truck?
No, cowboys. It's a real old-fashioned cattle drive.
For three friends on the vacation of a lifetime.
Welcome to the Stone Ranch.
Came out of your city slickers. You're going to go home, cowboy.
Yahoo!
Male bonding.
My ass hurts just watching this.
Is going to leave a mark.
Hold them out!
They ride.
Hi, Curly. Kill anyone today?
They ain't over yet.
Oh.
They wrote.
It did, like, when I was a kid, it seemed very grown up to me. Probably in a way that My Blue Heaven should do, like, but doesn't, like, it's a good example of, like, of that kind of comedy that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right, it is.
Because it's not, like, because you establish them as real people, and then you take them somewhere sort of silly, like, they have to be cowboys, but they don't, it's not like they fucking stumble upon a time machine and all of a sudden they're back in the Old West. They send them to like a sort of a recreation of a ranch, and they have to move the cattle from one place to the other, and then things happen, and then you start almost taking them seriously as cowboys. And it's so well done because it should be stupid, but it's not.
But also, it's sincere, and the 90s and that kind of gag comedy killed sincerity, man. Like, I mean, I can't think of one, but it really wouldn't surprise me if The Simpsons had done some kind of City Slickers piss take.
Oh, they did. Yeah, no, I can see it. They definitely did.
Fair play, because it is about, you know, a guy having a kind of a midlife crisis, and it would be easy to sneer at, you know? You can make those jokes.
Now, they did fuck everything up and make a second one.
The Legend of Curly's Gold. Yeah,
just like, no, why are we doing this? But anyway, sorry, you're right. I'm almost certain that there is a Simpsons sneer at that.
I love these shows I'm giving out about. I just... Almost impossible. I think they made it sort of impossible for other things to be sincere in a way, which is because The Simpsons was sincere by times, but it's not anymore.
Is there anything else you want to mention there in regards to anything we've been talking about?
No, I just feel like I've probably been very, very hard on My Blue Heaven. I didn't hate it. It's just it kept annoying me. That's all. But man, even if it is supposed to be like Paul Blart Mall Cop, it's not laugh a minute enough for it to even be that, like,
no,
you know?
No, you're right.
I don't know why I keep steering myself back into the fucking hole. I didn't like it, but it's not, you know, it's grand. I'm sure many people don't hate it, and that's fine. I'm not angry about it or anything. I love Joan Cusack, but I've already said my piece. But imagine if I met her now, if she heard this and then I met her down the street. How lily-livered would I seem to go, but I actually really like you, Joan. Gross Point Blank was one of my favorite films in my 20s. Oh,
yeah, she's in that. That's a great film, yeah.
Yeah, My Blue Heaven. Try it. Try it out, folks. Maybe you'll like it. See, Danny did.
Yeah, I know you disagree with me on almost everything, but... I like it fine. I like those kind of films. Like I don't need to be blown away every time I switch on a film. Sometimes I just want to be just a gentle breeze will do rightly sometimes.
Like my cousin Vinny doesn't blow anybody away, but it's a perfect little film. Nothing wrong with that film.
Something that's just like a fucking like a nice watch, just ticks along, works perfectly, and you know, marks time for you, whatever. I don't know, I was struggling with that watch metaphor, but
Dan, before I die, somebody has to make good comedy again. But Nora Ephron's dead, Dan. Nora Ephron's dead, and she was the last person who was able to do it, so what am I going to do?
But speaking of, ironically enough, what about Tina Fey and Steve Carell in Date Night from like what's probably 15 years ago or something? But I remember that being a good film.
I like that. Got very bad reviews.
I wouldn't worry about that, these reviewers.
It was a good film. I liked it. Yeah, but that's exactly, yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. A film like that, I have a lot of time. Like Kermode used to bombast them every time. But I really, a lot of those films, a lot of those Apatow films, I really liked. I enjoyed them.
Well, I think Kermode didn't like the ones where it's like, oh, it's a man-child who farts and farts his way into a pregnancy or whatever. Like, you know, I think they're the kind of ones he didn't like. But not all those Apatow films were like that, you know?
It's not like Knocked Up wasn't aware that he was a man-child who'd farted his way into it. I mean, part of the drama of that film was like,
Seth Rogen farts his way into being president. That's a joke that Kat, we were watching, I don't know what we were watching recently with Jonah Hill in it, but Kat just went, Jonah Hill in his fattest role to date.
That guy has lost a lot of weight.
He has, actually. Yeah, it's true. But whatever film we were watching, he had not.
It must be depressing when you lose all that weight and you go, oh, still not handsome. Because, you know, you're the young fella from Stand By Me. He came out the other end and he was like, oh, yeah, he's a good-looking fella. What's his name? O'Connell. Oh, is it Jerry O'Connell?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, he came out and he was pretty. He was like, okay, yeah, he lost the weight. He's a good-looking chap. Jonah Hill,
still is an old hill heading him
in his fattest role yet as president. Can the man who hated politics be president?
I have to bounce. I have to go.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. It's late. Right. Listen, man. I will get talking to you. Have a watch of my cousin Vinny.
Looking forward to it.
Remember, have in your back pocket the priest's story from Hyperion.
I've heard that name.
My cousin Vinny. Next. Yeah, it's a great book, but it's also like a series of short stories. I will get you to read the first one before too long, in the next wee while. So
perfect.
Psych yourself up for that, because you're going
to
hit it.
I'm going to do press-ups to get ready.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I'm going to watch My Cousin Vinny.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back in a couple of weeks talking about My Cousin Vinny. And cheerio. Have a good one.
Hasta lasagna.
Wherever we'll go, and even in the night, I hurry to my blue heaven. Just turn to the right. You find a little bright light that leads you to my blue heaven. You find a golden place by your place on the road. Oh, little nest, that nest is where the rose is blue. Just Molly and me, and baby make three. We happy in my blue heaven.